Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Jeff Byers. Jeff, on Saturday, pretty much a tale of two halves. It ended with Penn State pulling away, winning 41-13. Significantly enough, it was a 28-point difference. So for those degenerates out there, phew, they pulled it out and covered the spread. But Jeff, again, that slow start. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I was a little surprised at it. I do think there's a couple of things that I do think we need to keep in mind. One is that the other team does sometimes deserve some credit. And I do think that that Northwestern team is playing really hard and that they have kind of banded together here. And, you know, some of it was, I mean, the fumble on the opening kickoff, it's like, well, you hold them to 3 points there. That's actually a pretty darn good job by your defense. I don't know. It was one of those games. I just never had the feeling that Penn State was actually in any real trouble. And it's funny because I'm reading through comments and friends, and I do the same thing. So I'm not calling out my friends. I make the same comments if the Steelers get up big or something like that. I'm like, oh, man, the Steelers are crushing them. I knew this was going to happen. And then the Steelers lose the game or something. But it was funny. I had a buddy of mine say, you know, yeah, Penn State needs to take lessons. This is during the first half. Needs to take lessons from USC on how you handle road games that you should win. And I'm like, well, at the end of the day, how'd that comment turn out for you? I just think we do get a little too caught up. And again, I'm guilty as everybody. But we get too caught up in what we think everybody else is doing. And not appreciating the 1-0 mentality that James Franklin brings. Each game really is a season unto itself. And I'm watching the Georgia-Auburn game. I'm watching, you know, bits and pieces of the USC-Colorado game. There is a lot to be said for getting through each week 1-0. And at the end of the day, no matter how it looks, I don't know that you necessarily can take a whole lot from one game and apply it to the next, because I do think there's just entirely different game plans that come into play. There's different coaching strategies, both from Penn State's perspective and the opponents. And obviously there's entirely different personnel. I think at the end of the day, you just take the W, you move on, you keep trying to learn and improve. There's lots of things we can get into with the offense that I think, you know, I don't know how much we actually know at this point of the season about where this unit can get to this year. It feels like they could be pretty darn special, but again, we're almost halfway through the season. And while we're seeing some good things, we're not seeing, you know, what I would call a special offense. But I'm also watching like an LSU Ole Miss game and I'm thinking, well, overall, I think I'm okay with watching Penn State progress the way it is. So, like I said, at the end of the day, you got a good win on the road. You take it, you move on. And to me, this all right now keeps boiling down to two and maybe three games. I am curious to see kind of how things continue to progress here with Maryland too. I'm starting to get ready to throw them into the mix, although we'll find out here in a hurry with the Maryland-Ohio State game, just where they're at. But, you know, the Ohio State and Michigan, Jim, I think I'm the first to point this out. I think those are two really big games for Penn State this season.
That's what I appreciate about you, Jeff. You are able to get a new perspective that nobody else presents.
I'm known for my insight, Jim.
Well, let's get through this. A couple of things that you said struck me. One of them, I think you were saying that despite where the score was, I don't believe you lost any confidence in Penn State actually winning the game. And towards that end, let me give you a quick story about one of my let's call him a degenerate friend. Let's call him Jay. And Jay at halftime with the score 10-10, who he had bet Penn State and was fearful about that 28-point spread. Well, I decided to double – I mean, Jay decided at halftime to double down on the Nittany Lions. And at halftime, the spread became 13.5 points. So with confidence, Jay bet Penn State again at halftime, thinking he could recover his losses with that 28-point spread. Well, lo and behold, at the end of the game, Jay – ended up winning both these bets. So let's say that it worked out pretty well for James Franklin, his team, and a few of the degenerates out there who are, you know, 5-0 along with the Nittany Lions. But let's get into some of those things that happened during the game. You brought it up. You mentioned it. The definition of a slow start is fumbling the opening kickoff. But I thought the defense's response to it, with essentially Northwestern losing yardage before, you know, kicking the chip shot field goal, that was it. The answer was there. My impression was, okay, that was the wake-up call. Now they would be fine. Didn't exactly turn out that way, though, Jeff.
No, and I don't know. I don't know what the answer is there in terms of the slow start. It is obviously something they were very concerned about, and I think it was a point of emphasis all week long. I do think it's just different when you get into an environment like that where, you know, the stands are half empty or, you know, more than half empty, and it almost has a high school type of feel to it. And you know, again, you're talking about a Big Ten football game. I just think that's a weird thing. But I didn't think, I don't know, it was weird because as you're watching the game, I didn't get the feeling that you know, it wasn't the Penn State wasn't taking this game seriously or they were sleepwalking through anything. It just felt similar to that Illinois game that where they just were a little bit off again. And Drew Aller, you know, certainly didn't have his best day. I don't think there's any reason, again, for panic, but that's two road games out of two road games now where this team just has not looked sharp offensively. And, you know, it wasn't a tremendous number of penalties, but my gosh, the timing of the penalties and the silliness of the penalties in situations where it's like, okay, the one thing we can't do here is jump. They jump. One thing you can't do here is, you know, go offsides. Oop, we went offsides. Like it was just frustrating from that standpoint. And again, do I think that's something that they're not emphasizing in practice or working on, or that the players, you know, want to get corrected? No, but I will say there's now just that that seed of worry in my mind for the Ohio State game because, again, you've had now it's a small sample size, but two road games, and in both cases, the offense just has not been able to get in sync, at least in the first half.
That has been the case, and that's, again, looking at things through the prism of the two games against Ohio State and Michigan. They're not going to have an opportunity to fix the road game issues prior to Ohio State. That is the next road game, and there will be the question of if they're ready. And on offense, we could take a look at several different things. Let's start with Drew Aller, who you mentioned. Here's the guy who, in that first game or two, seemed so connected with the wide receivers. If there was a we didn't see any of those, gee, that was a poor throw by Drew Aller. Oh, he and his receivers are not on the same page. We saw none of that early. Now we're seeing a lot of that. And how do you put your finger on that? Where is the issue? Is it the road issue? Is it the receivers? Is it Trey Wallace not being there, Jeff?
Yeah, I do think I think Wallace's impact is, again, maybe a little greater than at least what I was anticipating when, you know, it became apparent he wasn't going to be available in that Illinois game. I also do think, you know, part of it, I suspect anyway, is you're seeing some different looks. And again, I don't know this. I mean, I'm not somebody that just because of my other jobs and stuff, but like I would love to sit down and break down the tape. And I know there are people, obviously T. Frank and others that do that. And it's a tremendous service. I don't do that. So I don't know with certainty, but I suspect that part of this is just different wrinkles that defenses are throwing in. And Drew Aller, as good as he is, and I think he's good and is going to be great, until you see some different things, and both quarterback and receivers are reacting to it, you don't know how to adjust to what you're seeing. So, you know, if week one, you're seeing a specific defensive look, and everybody's, all right, this is what we do, and then there's a disguised look the next time you see it, again, maybe receiver or quarterback isn't seeing it the same way, or reacting to it the way you want. I just think part of this is the learning experience and the growing process for young receivers and a first-year starter at quarterback. You know, I guess the slight concern for me is that, again, now you're almost at the midway point of the season, and this Northwestern defense is not exactly a vaunted defense. I mean, I don't think anybody is going to mistake the Wildcats for Ohio State or Michigan's defense. And, you know, there is some limited time now, as you said, to get these things rectified to where you're on the same page and you feel good about the way this is going forward. Again, it's just kind of a weird thing, Jim, because I think this team and this coaching staff really is focused on, all right, let's just take care of this week. And I still feel good about the matchup, in particular with Ohio State, at least as we sit here right now, because I think they will scheme specifically for that. And I think it's going to be a terrific game. I really do, in Columbus. And it's going to come down to a play or two here or there. And I think some of the experiences that Penn State is having right now, at least the optimistic me is saying, hey, that's going to pay benefits. They'll know how to adjust the next time they get into this situation, which likely will be at Ohio State.
Very good, Jeff. All right, that is it for quarter number one. Stick around. We got lots more to talk about with this game. Stick around for quarter number two.
Hey, guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number two. He's Jeff Byers. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking all things Penn State Northwestern from Saturday night. A 41-13 win for the Nittany Lions. You would not know it was a 28-point win if you base it on the reaction from a lot of the Nittany Lion fans. We're taking a look, Jeff, at some of those concerns. We're talking about Drew Aller. And I think some of the misfires from him, I'm not too worked up about that. What I do have some concern about is when he and the receivers are not on the same page. They cut in, he throws out. And then afterwards, you look at the receiver and Drew Aller. They're looking at each other, palms out, like, wait a minute, you didn't go where you were supposed to. Well, no, you didn't throw where you were supposed to. And not to overplay the Trey Wallace thing, and me, what I'm liable to do, Jeff, not just watch a game and overreact. What I like to do is take a look at the numbers after the game and then overreact. So when I see something like Dante Cephas, who's the guy that a lot of Penn State fans and I think the coaching staff thought would step up and be one of the primary guys, he was targeted 7 times with only 2 completions. The first couple games, I believe first game against West Virginia, Trey Wallace targeted, 8 times with 7 completions. Delaware, I know it's Delaware, but I think it was 3 for 3 on targets and completions. Huge difference there, Jeff, and am I overreacting to that?
No, I think it's something that they definitely need to figure out and get rectified. And, you know, the I guess, best case scenario is that Wallace is back in there and, you know, a full go here by Ohio State at the very least, and that feels like it's at least a possibility here. But I do think that there is something where they're not on the same page. Now, again, is it something that they can get rectified over the course of the next few weeks here? You would think so. I think, again, that's the good thing about having, I think, a quarterback who's pretty doggone bright and committed to being the best he can be. I think you have a receiving corps that's much in the same boat. And I think as Mike Yurcich and these guys go back and look at it, they can get this figured out. The problem is, at least from the fan's standpoint, I mean, those guys can at least, they know what they're doing to address it day in and day out. I don't think against UMass you're going to actually get any indication of where they're at in terms of that improvement. So that I don't think until you see it either develop and progress positively or the same problems reoccur against Ohio State, we're just not going to know where this thing is. And that's, from a fan standpoint, a pretty uncomfortable position to be in with you know, the biggest game of the season around the corner. But I do think there is a benefit to the experience that these guys are getting to having seen this stuff now, and whether or not they react and make the adjustments so that everybody, okay, now I know when, you know, the defense is in this scheme and this player is playing straight up, that I know I turn out, not in, or Drew Aller knows I'm going to turn out and not in, whatever it may be. You know, so again, it's kind of, do you want to take the glass half full or glass half empty approach? I would tend to be the optimist, and I'm like, well, these guys are smart guys. They're going to look at it and they're going to say, okay, next time this happens, this is what we all need to do, and this is how we address this, and that they'll have it figured out. You know, that being said, we've seen the miscommunication now in a few games here. So it is an ongoing concern for sure.
Well, the good thing here, Jeff, is we have some balance to our show. You being the glass half full guy, me being the glass half empty and leaking guy, we have a balance going here. My other concern with it overall is, the wide receivers don't seem to be getting open, Jeff. And I'm sure it has something to do with the defense. You do have to give credit to the opposing team sometimes. But that now seems to be becoming a trend. I think, correctly give Drew Aller credit for the ability to go through his progressions, not lock in on one guy while someone else is off free. I'm thrown to my first read. He can go to that second and third read, and he's been having the time to do that. It just appears that we're not getting those wide receivers wide open, and that, I think, has to be on the wide receivers. The other part of the equation, Jeff, is the running game. And the running backs, Catron Allen, Nick Singleton, have yet to have a rush for over 20 yards. Here they went into this game against Northwestern. That was, coming into this game, very poor with their rush defense. And we didn't see a change there, Jeff.
No, and that to me, if you're asking me, my biggest concern right now, it is that, because you have, you know, a couple of veterans at running back, and by the way, Trey Potts has emerged as a fantastic third option there in the running back core, and obviously made quite an impact in the Northwestern game again, and is becoming, you know, a bigger part of this offense. But I do think, you know, fans, and I suspect the program as a whole, rightfully expected a lot more, because we saw more from these guys when they were a year younger in terms of the big plays and, you know, really being able to open the game up. And you have a more veteran offensive line. You have guys that are both in their second year now running the ball, and you're just not, it doesn't feel like you're seeing that progress. And, you know, it'd be one thing if, listen, well, they just played, you know, what are you going to do when you face a great defense like Iowa? Well, that's fine. But you now have games against Delaware and Northwestern thrown in there as well. And you're just not getting those explosive plays. And it is hard to envision, although not impossible, how you turn that around and get those big plays against Ohio State or Michigan when you weren't getting them against Delaware or Northwestern. Like, that just seems counterintuitive in an unlikely scenario. That being said, we've seen these guys do it. So I still keep coming back to the possibility that all of this does come together, and that the second half of the season, you know, the things that have been just a little out of sync and missing here or there. And there were a couple of runs where I thought Singleton, it's like, wait, you know, he turned the corner on the one. It's like, oh, here we go. Oh, nope, they got him, you know, did a nice job with the angles and got him cut off. There were a couple of times on Saturday where it felt like, oh, here we go. And nope, that it wasn't. So with both the passing game and the running game, it does not feel to me watching it like it's far away and like, well, no, these guys just aren't, there's no way this is going to happen. It feels like it certainly could, but again, we're almost halfway through the season now and it hasn't. And I think, you know, you can at least properly sum up that it is a trend, at least at this point, that these big plays, again, really in either the running or the passing game, are not occurring.
And we had T. Frank present a theory a week or two, Jeff, with Nick Singleton's struggles, as he's a year ago, he's a home run hitter. He'll bounce it outside looking for that big run, and sometimes to the detriment of the play, where if it's third and two, he looks to bounce, he only gets 1 yard, and they don't get the first down. Now he's aware, hey, look, it's third and two, you run straight ahead, you get 3 yards, and it's a successful run. But his theory is that perhaps Singleton has overcompensated and is now looking to do, and I'm using air quotes here, the right thing, as opposed to looking for the home run.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. I think part of it too is what opposing defenses, again, are trying to give up or willing to give up, and what they're focused on trying to prevent. But to me, it is, even if all of that is true and that sounds logical to me, it's still just hard to believe that somebody with that talent and explosiveness, again, 5 games into the season, and, you know, and the other part of it, but I mean, it was the same thing last year, but it is not as though Nicholas Singleton is getting, you know, 20 to 25 opportunities a game, right? Because both he and Catron Allen and now Trey Potts is, again, becoming a more integral part of the offense. So you are limited in your opportunities here. So I do think that's also part of the equation. It's just that it's the same equation that was in place last year, and, you know, you still got those home run hits. Again, it's one of those things. It's just weird, Jim, because to me, I feel like, yeah, it's not hitting the way you're hoping, but it feels like it is so doggone close to everything coming together and this team being like really good offensively. And because it's so good defensively, I still keep coming back to, they don't need to be great offensively. I think they can be. And I still think that's obviously the hope, is that in the second half of the season here, this offense becomes a juggernaut. But honestly, if they can just be good, if they can just keep, you know, plugging along, if you can get a couple of long sustained drives against the Ohio States and the Michigans of the world, with this defense, you're going to at least give yourself a chance to go ahead and win the game in the fourth quarter. So it's weird. You don't feel great about where they're at coming out of the Northwestern game, but I mean, everything that they want to achieve is in front of them, and it doesn't seem like it's a far-fetched dream for this team to realize the possibility of an undefeated season and, you know, a playoff berth and even a national title. It also doesn't feel like it's impossible that this team ends up, you know, 10-2 or even 9-3. Again, I'm curious to see how Maryland fares here in the next couple of weeks as well. But yeah, we'll see how the rest of the season plays out.
Okay. Again, there you are. We'll see how it plays out. All right, Jeff, I'm not done with the offense. I'm going to ask you next segment about the play calling and what role that has in some of the struggles on offense. Stick around.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff, I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State Northwestern game from the other night. Jeff, just to show that I am not totally a glass half empty guy.
Yeah.
Couple things that I did like, and in getting Nick Singleton the ball somewhere where he has an opportunity to make a play, I like the idea that they are throwing him the ball more often. He was targeted 6 times with 6 completions like that for a total of 39 yards. Interestingly enough, 38 out of the 39 yards were after the catch. So he's been the outlet, but I think that puts him outside on the boundary where he potentially can make a big play. But I will point out, because I can't help myself, the one negative there, there was a play, I don't know if you recall it, off to the left side, little dump-off pass to him, and it appeared a lot of green grass with one defender and one blocker, and the block was missed. I can't remember which offensive lineman it was. The block was missed, and it seemed to me like that was the big difference between being tackled for no gain and perhaps 10, 15 at least, and perhaps more kind of gain. Maybe that's talking to your point about they're this close.
Yeah, I do remember the play you're talking about, and I do think that there were just several plays like that throughout the course of the game where, again, it felt like, boy, this could be it. And then, nope, not quite. And I do think there's going to be big plays coming, but I've been saying this now for, 4 weeks since the opener against West Virginia, so I'm willing to concede the possibility that I'm just wrong and that those big plays aren't coming. But it just feels like there's too much talent there for this team to not start cashing in on some of those opportunities. And I will say, I also do think that there is something to be said about the way Penn State is approaching these games through the first 5 weeks. And it's not that I think that James Franklin and Mike Yurcich are sitting there saying, listen, let's only show, you know, 30% of our playbook. We're going to save everything up for Ohio State and Michigan because that's when the fans want to see it. But it does feel like they're still not doing everything that they're capable of in terms of play calling. And listen, Northwestern, you can understand defensively, it's probably on paper a pretty good strategy to run on first down and actually to just run, period, because they have struggled against the run. But Penn State was very predictable on Saturday until in the second half that it was going to be a run on first down. And in fairness, I think the first two drives, I had this written down and I don't know what I did with it, but I believe the first two drives where they didn't run on first down, there was an incompletion followed by a sack and then another incompletion. So it's like, well, perhaps running on first down was the right call because you want to get some positive yards and not put your offense in a situation where everybody knows you have to be throwing.
Jeff, I did write it down because that has been one of my big complaints is this. We need to establish the run no matter what. And let me give you some of the numbers. And again, lies, damn lies, statistics. So I'm going to give some of these, and they could be parsed many different ways. I feel like I'm keeping you from saying something. Go ahead and say
no,
it.
I'm curious to hear the analysis here, because I did write it down, and I can't find what I did with it, so go ahead.
Actually, in the first half, the first two times they passed the ball on first down, they were both completions, one for 6 yards, one for 16 yards, and then it was the third time where they had that incompletion. But overall, for the game, they ran the ball 14 times on first down for 59 yards. What I think is meaningful, though, is 7 out of those 14 times, they ran the ball for 3 yards or less. On the flip side, they threw the ball 10 times on first down, completed 7 of 10 passes on first down for 81 yards. And I think what is also telling is, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 out of their last 7 possessions, they threw the ball on first down. So
yeah,
it seemed like they adapted a little bit later in the game. Now, to be fair, is there something to this pounding another team, running the ball for 3, 4, 5 yards that is going to then prevail in the second half where your team scores 5 out of the last 6 possessions, Jeff?
Yeah, and actually that's better balance than I would have thought, although I did know that they, as the game went on there were a lot more throws on first down in that second half. There's my thinking is, with the Northwestern game in specific, I can understand, hey, let's establish the line of scrimmage. I mean, you go into that game, I think rightfully believing that you should control the line of scrimmage pretty much no matter what, and that you need to take advantage of the opportunity here to get the ground game going. I think Northwestern, conversely, is like, hey, the one thing we have to do is establish the line of scrimmage and try to make sure Penn State just doesn't beat us ramming the ball down our throat. So I guess for me, and I know this will be a surprise, until we get to Ohio State and Michigan, I'm not really going to know what to make of this, because I want to see what the approach is there against Ohio State and then Michigan, and what the effectiveness is, because I don't think there's any doubt, at least in my mind, that the potential is there, again, for Drew Aller in a short passing game with those tight ends and with those running backs, and that, you know, we saw it with Singleton and getting out in space, and and even the receiving core, that if you can get that short passing game going early, right, that feels like it's going to set up both the run game and the long pass game. And they have a quarterback and they have the personnel in the receiving core, which includes the tight ends and running backs, to be able to do that. And I still think when it gets to crunch time in those games, that is what you're going to see. I think they're going to take advantage of that tight end situation that they have. I think they're going to take advantage of short pass game opportunities early, and that will set up. I also do think there is something to running the ball throughout the course of the game, and even if you're only getting 2 or 3 yards here or there, one, keeping the defense honest, but also trying to wear them down over the course of the game. And, you know, to a large degree, I will say Penn State has had success doing that. Again, when you're putting together 12, 13, 14, 15-yard or play drives, it does take a toll. And we've seen Penn State do that often throughout the course of this season. And, you know, and I understand doing it against a Delaware or an Illinois is different than doing it against Ohio State or Michigan. But I think if this team can execute the way it has in spots throughout the first five games against Ohio State and Michigan, that it's going to give itself, again, an excellent chance at least to win the game late.
Okay, Jeff, let's finally take a look at the other side of the ball. Let's look at that defense. And the glass half empty guy will say there was some sloppy tackling going on. But with that said, there were just seven sacks, 12 tackles for loss. The defense, and I think right from the start, we mentioned it earlier, you fumble the kickoff, you give Northwestern the possession in the red zone. The defense has to come in unexpectedly, and boom, boom, boom. They stop them first, second, third down, force a field goal. This is a defense, no matter how you cut it, this is an exceptional defense.
It is, and the neat thing to me, Jim, on Saturday, I mean, Abdul Carter played great, Daquan Hardy with the interception, but the two guys that to me really stood out and I think starts to give you real excitement for the possibilities of what the future holds for this defense, because you had some established stars and we've seen some guys that we thought would make an impact start to really make an impact. But, you know, Kobe King and Zane Durant just had sensational games on Saturday, and both have been good all season. But I think you're starting to see more and more guys. It's like, hey, I know now Cam Miller is somebody that can play at a high level. I know, you know, again, the established, the Adisa Isaacs and, you know, Abdul Carters and
Chop Robinson.
Guys, yes, Chop Robinson. And you know, even in the secondary, you had guys that you know are going to be there, the Kalen Kings and the Johnny Dixons. But you're seeing more, we talk about depth all the time, and you're just seeing more and more guys not just make contributions, but step up and star in different spots. And I do think, Jim, this defense is special and has a chance to be, I guess, really special by the end of the year. I mean, they are difference makers right now. And you know, I keep coming back to it, but I think this team is going to be in every game and will have a chance to win every game this year because of how good that defense is. And if they can just get, you know, a couple of good drives and a big play or two from the offense, I think that 12-0 mark at the end of the regular season is certainly there for the taking.
And James Franklin often talks about that complementary football. And this was a defense that held the fort down while the offense was getting its act together. And by the second half, got to point out, the offense scored on 5 of their last 6 possessions. All right, Jeff, there's still a few odds and ends from that game I want to go over with you. Stick around, we'll hit those in quarter number 4.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number 4 on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff, I'm Jim. This is quarter number 4. We're talking Penn State football and specifically Penn State's big 41-13 win over Northwestern. Jeff, we talked about it. It was a tale of two halves. The first half, concerning, 10-10 at halftime against a not very good Northwestern team. But you made the point of this. Sometimes you have to give the other team some credit. And I'm going to give them, Northwestern, some credit on a couple things. One of which, they played to win the game. And I'm thinking specifically of going for it on fourth down in their own territory, and also the fake punt. Now, they failed on both of those, but that was an offense that was not going to drive the ball down the field often against this Penn State defense. If you didn't take any chances, you were guaranteed to lose. You might have kept the game closer, but you would have lost the game. Their only shot was to take those chances, and to be honest with you, I thought they were both pretty good gambles on their part.
I completely agree with you on both counts. They, you know, to some degree were playing with house money. And I think if you have an opportunity to try to pull off a big upset, yeah, you're not going to do it by playing conservatively all day long. It's just you are not going to win that game. And yeah, I think they had to take some chances, and I'm with you. I liked both the decision on both of those, and actually I like the play call and the everything about it from Northwestern's perspective, even though neither worked out. I just think in those situations, you if you are serious about, hey, we're out here to try to win the game, that's the type of thing you need to do. And I really am impressed with Northwestern and the way this team, you know, played and hung in there last week against Minnesota. And then same thing against Penn State. I know the game kind of got away from them at the end score wise, but if you watched, that team played hard from start to finish, and you can see they are unified and they are playing for each other. I just think there's something special about the way that Northwestern team is going about its business right now.
Are you any more confident now on the field goal kicking?
No, I'm not any more or less confident, to be honest with you. I keep coming back to it, and I know it probably sounds tiresome to some degree, but I do think each week it really is a season unto itself, and there's just so many different things. I mean, you can argue right now that the special teams, well, I don't even know this is an argument against it. The special teams has been the weakest part of the three phases of the game for Penn State. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. You had the, between the fumbled punt, which Penn State recovered against Iowa, and the fumbled kickoff, and then the missed and blocked field goals, and again, Riley Thompson's been okay, but not spectacular with the punt game. So, I mean, if there is an area of concern to me for Penn State in terms of, hey, these close games are often decided by special teams and kind of those hidden yards, yeah, I think that's a concern. At the same time, do I think that, you know, Penn State could be just fine and pin Maryland and Ohio State and Michigan deep with some key punts, and that they can get some big returns somewhere along the way and could win a game on a late field goal? Yeah, I think all of that stuff could happen. And you just have to wait and see how it plays out. But yeah, for me, if you're asking what the biggest concern is on this year's team, and what I see is the area that is most likely to hold them back from an undefeated season or a playoff berth or a Big Ten championship, yeah, to me, the most likely culprit for holding this team back would be special teams. But I can also see this team coming out smelling like roses in a couple of key games and key situations. I just, I think, again, wait for it, my brilliant insight. Jim, we're going to see how that plays out, and then we'll know after those games whether or not that is something that costs this team.
In an upset, Jeff, I'm actually more optimistic about the 45-yard field goal that he made with ease. I was really pleased to see that. It did make me more confident. Jeff, I wanted to ask you about the play by Prabula, the throw to Trey Potts late in the game to, by the way, cover the spread by hitting that touchdown. And I don't think there was much doubt that Bo Prabula, he looked like he was faking taking the knee at that point, which tells you what stage of the game they were at to even bluff that. But do you have any issue with that play?
Well, so I didn't know about the rule that you're not allowed to do that. So I guess to whatever degree they got lucky that it wasn't called. The thing about it, it wasn't, it was like 3.5 minutes left, right? So, I mean, it wasn't a situation where Penn State was, could run out the clock there. So that I agree that that is definitively what it looked like. There is part of me that thinks it's just, there is no way he could have been doing that, that he was actually just trying to sell that he was just going to run up the middle. But when you watch the way the knee drops, I mean, I don't think I'm with you. I don't think there's any doubt that he was trying to fake that. It's just such a weird fake. I don't know. I really don't know what to make of it. I can't imagine that that's something that they've worked on with him. It felt to me like it was just something kind of instinctive that he's like, oh, I'm going to set this up by kind of half dropping my knee. But from the defensive standpoint, and again, you're in a split second, but again, with three whatever it was left, it's like part of me has to be thinking on defense, wait a second, why would they be taking a knee when we can get the ball back still with, even with the game being decided, you're not going to intentionally give the other team the ball back with whatever could have been, a minute and a half or whatever left in the contest. So I don't know. There was a lot that was just weird about that play. Obviously, it worked out brilliantly for Penn State. But I'd love to know a little bit more about how that actually developed and what went into it.
I suspect he did that on his own. And if it did create even a hesitation on the defense's part, it's kind of like when a quarterback is past the line of scrimmage and still bluffs he's going to pass the ball. On defense, you just react instinctively to what you see in front of you. You don't really have the time to think, oh, wait a minute, there's 3.5 minutes left. Why would he be taking a knee at this point? But, you know, watching the game live, as soon as he started to do it, I was like, oh, he's taking a knee. And I think the way that play should be run is him taking, you know, a false step forward as if he were running the ball. But anyway, I did also want to ask you about the personal foul call. I forget which defensive back it was called for, and they said he threw the ball at the guy. Again, Jeff, there were so many things that could be defined as unsportsmanlike conduct. Boy, I hate when the officials start doing that.
Yeah, and that one wasn't. I'm with you. That to me was just a guy. It wasn't like a taunting situation. At least it sure didn't look like that to me. Where he's like throwing it, you know, take that player, and he's throwing the ball at the guy or anything. I mean, it was like, you know, hey, get the ball off the field. I don't know. In the overall scheme of things, that seemed pretty tame for a personal foul call. That being said, I guess, again, another teaching moment. You use it as coach. Hey, make sure you get the ball back to the official, whatever. Fortunately, you know, it didn't impact the outcome of this game. But yeah, if you're in a big, you know, matchup and you get that call that keeps a drive alive or changes field position around significantly or anything like that, that's pretty tough to take. I think sometimes the officials need to kind of recognize, okay, game situation, what actually happened here, and maybe just go over to the player. Hey, just so you know, I could have called you a flag there. Just make sure you get the ball. Like, I think that's how you can handle a situation like that where, again, there was clearly, to me, it was clear there was nothing intended by it. It was just, you know, almost carelessness, if you want to call it that, with the football at the end of the play.
I think you're exactly right. An official who's taking control of the game could do exactly what you said. Hey, look, next time you get close, it's going to be called. So knock it off.
Yes.
That would have been plenty. And I think the other part of the problem with this is you've now established such a low bar for a personal foul that with the opposing team, in this situation, be Northwestern, if they do anything, Jeff, anything at all, as an official, you'd be required to throw a flag now.
Yeah, and I just don't think, you don't want to put yourself in that position as an official, right? So, yeah, I'm a big fan of just more conversational warning type stuff in those situations, and then move on. And especially, you know, football is just such an emotional game, and there are so many, you know, heat of the moment things that can happen. And to me, this was not that. Like, this was just, again, to me, carelessness, if anything, in tossing the ball to the side. I don't think it was good judgment by the official.
I don't think so either, Jeff. And the other part to that is, remember when it used to be you scored a touchdown and you could do nothing except toss the ball back to the official or drop it? That has been changing over the last couple seasons. There's a lot more going on between shushing the crowd and spiking the ball and doing all those things. So I think there's a lot more egregious things that are going on than what we saw on that particular play. And it was the same thing a couple weeks ago with the Illinois game. And if you recall in that game, they ended up calling two more because I think, again, they set that terrible precedent. They set the bar too low for a personal foul. All right, Jeff. Unfortunately, that is it for the show. We are out of time. Thank you, Jeff. And thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.